Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, as the death toll in the Abuja bombing rises to at least 75, Nigeria's president vows to defeat those responsible.
The terrorists and those who are sponsoring them will never stop this country from moving. We will continue to move from strength to strength.
And the ANC veterans who are campaigning against their own party just weeks before an election. This is how they explain themselves.
What did Mandela say when we were coming to power? He said, if we don't deliver and solve the problems of the people, then they have the right to march against us.
Just two of our stories coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
In Nigeria, suspected Islamist insurgents have abducted more than 100 female students from a secondary school in the northeastern state of Borno. The mass kidnapping comes one day after the Nigerian capital Abuja was hit by a bomb attack that killed at least 75 people and wounded 141. On the line to Lagos, I first asked our correspondent, Sam Olukoya, what he could tell us about the abductions.
Well, the abduction happened in a town called Chibok. It's at the boundary between Borno and Adamawa State. Gunmen went into the town at night at about 10 and started attacking houses and looting. And eventually, after some hours, they went to the senior girls' secondary school, where they abducted a number of girls. We don't have the actual figures, but some reports say the number of girls abducted could be as many as 200. Other reports say about 100 girls were abducted.
What are the chances of their being rescued?
I was discussing this earlier with somebody, and he said if we've forgotten, a number of girls were abducted not too long ago, and as far as issues are concerned, that matter is as if it's closed. Nobody has said anything about those particular girls. And so for these girls who have been abducted, it's as if in a matter of days, it will be a forgotten issue. That's just a sad reality for many people here, that security is completely compromised. So it's like everybody to himself. If you are unlucky to get in the hands of these terrorist groups, then you cannot, under any circumstance, count on the government to rescue you.
Can we turn now to the bombing in Abuja? How much progress are the authorities making with their investigations?
Well, as far as many Nigerians are concerned, it's just another statistics. And the debate between yesterday and today actually is that there is so much noise because it happened very close to governments under the very eyes of the media. And that's why we have so much noise. And just like those we've seen at the border in Borno State, where nothing happened, so also this one, we are not likely to see any progress. Although today, the president at a political rally was saying that he will not give room to terror, nor give room to those who sponsor terrorism.
Terror will not stop Nigeria from moving. The terrorists and those who are sponsoring them will never stop this country from moving. We will continue to move from strength to strength.
Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. Sam, how are Nigerians coping with this ongoing insurgency? What's the mood like in the country?
The truth is that people are definitely afraid of the future of this country. I mean, if you meet people, that is what they are saying, that Nigeria appears to have overstretched its luck. And the issue now is that for how long shall we continue to count on luck to remain this way?
Sam Olukoya, who will be back a little later in the programme with a report on Nollywood. Meanwhile, the World Economic Forum said on Tuesday its summit on Africa would go ahead in Abuja next month, despite Monday's bomb attack. The World Economic Forum said it was putting unprecedented security measures in place to protect delegates. I've been talking via Skype to Jesper Cullen, an intelligence analyst with Risk Advisory Group, and I asked him how much of a threat Boko Haram posed to the World Economic Forum meeting.
I think to the forum itself, it doesn't pose a particularly substantial threat, but there is certainly a threat to the city more widely. As the government came out and said there's going to be a significant increased security presence in the city, and it's also around quite a small area where the forum will be taking place, close to the National Assembly, where there's already a very large security deployment. The attack yesterday, it happened in the outskirts of the city, targeting civilians, and the majority of Boko Haram attacks in the past year and a half have occurred up in the northeast, but have generally targeted civilians at public spaces, such as bus stops, restaurants, bars, those sorts of areas. So targeting of the forum itself is less likely, they're more hardened targets.
You mentioned the attacks that Boko Haram has been carrying out in the northeast of Nigeria. Now, to what extent is this chronic insecurity stopping the country from reaching its economic potential?
Well, the main area of Boko Haram activities is up in the northeast, three states in the northeast, which are not a main area by any means of for Nigeria's economy. It's mainly in the south, round by the delta, the oil-producing region, that is the main driver of Nigeria's economy. So in that way, these attacks aren't targeting the main centre of Nigeria's economy, and the effect is therefore limited. But there's a lot of concern about the terrorism threat, in particular with attacks such as this in Abuja, that Boko Haram could be spreading out of the northeast, which would, if they were to do so, would pose a much more serious threat to the Nigerian economy. But as yet, they haven't carried out any significant attack further south than Abuja, and the vast majority of their operations are in the north.
Do you see Nigeria overcoming its internal security problems in the foreseeable future, or is the bloodshed likely to continue?
No, I don't see any improvement in the situation. The Nigerian government is very distracted at the moment. It's focused on the 2015 elections, infighting within the ruling PDP party. And there's also infighting within the opposition. And that seems to be the focus of the government. They haven't changed their approach in the northeast since they declared a state of emergency there in mid-May last year, focused on a military approach, which in many cases has been counterproductive and aided support and recruit for groups such as Boko Haram and Ansaru, which is another Islamist militant group in Nigeria.
Jesper Cullen, intelligence analyst with Risk Advisory Group.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
On Tuesday, police in Rwanda paraded before the media four people accused of planning grenade attacks on the country's leaders. The alleged attacks, which were never carried out, were said to be in revenge for the assassination of former spy chief Patrick Karegeya, a critic of President Paul Kagame. The four included a well-known musician, a demobilized soldier, and a journalist. Our correspondent in Kigali, Flora Kaitezi, takes up the story.
A week before the arrest of journalist Kassie Ntamuhanga, media reports had indicated that he had gone missing on the night of April 7th. Police had also confirmed that they were investigating circumstances behind his alleged disappearance. But on Tuesday, Rwanda Security Services acknowledged that they have him in custody alongside popular gospel musician Kizito Mihigo and ex-soldier Jean-Paul Dukuzumuremyi. The three are suspected of plotting terrorist activities against the state of Rwanda. They are charged with collaborating with the FDLR terrorist outfit operating in eastern DRC. The suspects also allegedly were in contact with the Rwanda National Congress, an organization made up of Rwandan dissidents living in exile who oppose the Rwandan government. The director of Rwanda's Criminal Investigation Department, Theos Badeje, confirmed the arrests in a press conference in Kigali.
These suspects are believed to have joined terrorist organizations that have been targeting Rwanda. They were assigned different responsibilities which had a common objective of destabilizing national security.
The police who paraded the suspects before the media also displayed some of the evidence collected, which included hand grenades. Further explaining the gravity of the offences, the CID boss revealed that the suspected trio had links to plans of assassinating senior Rwandan government officials.
We believe their intentions, as they said, was to avenge the death of a Rwandan exile in collaboration with the FDLR and RNC. There were announcements here and there that were released confirming their collaboration.
Rwanda Media Commission, the country's media regulatory body, has condemned the arrest of Cassien Ntamuhanga, who was a journalist with a gospel radio station known as Amazing Grace. In his statement, Fred Muvunyi, the commission's chairman, said Namuhanga's rights must be respected.
When a journalist is arrested, the security organs have to inform us. But this does not mean that he should not be investigated for any other crimes not related to violation of media regulations. But we were not informed, and that is why we are worried that he may not be allowed a state attorney or his family may be restricted from seeing him, which is why we ask that he is accorded the rights he is entitled to.
The police will hand over the case to the prosecution, but they reiterated that they are still conducting investigations to arrest other members of the network presumed to still be at large.
Flora Kaitese reporting from Kigali.
Africa on the Move.
Nollywood, the Nigerian film industry, is one of Africa's success stories. It turns out 50 films a week, which puts it in the same bracket as India's Bollywood, though Bollywood's revenues are considerably higher. Nonetheless, Nollywood has turned into a key player in the Nigerian economy. And that economy, as recent recalculations revealed, is now the biggest in Africa. In Lagos, our correspondent Sam Olukoya has been to the movies.
Oh, you know, ladies like me are not satisfied with company of one man.
This is a typical Nollywood film, a movie done by Nigerian actors, produced, written and shot by Nigerian camera crew. Economists like Tunji Andrews say with recent figures that Nollywood contributes as much as 1.2% to Nigeria's economy. The country cannot afford to ignore the film sector.
Nollywood right now is amongst the top five earners for the economy. It shows that it's a major part of Nigeria's economy. It's too important, being one of the top five earners as it is. United Nations says it's employing 1 million people with the capabilities to employ another 1 million. That is, if things put together right, it can employ 2 million Nigerians wholesale. That is a huge dent for my unemployment figures. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Nollywood is important to the Nigerian economy.
Soundtracks such as this one are common in Nollywood films. The industry provides employment for a wide range of workers, such as soundtrack producers, directors, actors, scriptwriters, editors, cinematographers, marketers, and distributors. Fidelis Duka, a film director, says now that the true value of the film industry is known, it will be easier for those in the industry to get bank loans.
If you go to a bank will tell you there are no structures, we cannot value your industry, there's no value chain, there's no economic value chain, we cannot value how much is coming, how much is going out. But interestingly, what happened with the rebasing of Nigerian economy by the federal government has really put to rest that argument by the financial sector that Nollywood as an industry cannot be valued.
One criticism against Nigerian films is that they are low budget. But for the first time, a very high budget film has come out of Nigeria. The film, Half of a Yellow Sun, is a love story of two sisters caught up in the Nigerian Civil War. The film, which cost $15 million to produce, has already premiered abroad. It entered the Nigerian market last weekend. Duka says the production of the film may help raise the standards for Nigerian films.
It's a paradigm shift. It will only enhance quality now. People will look at that film and say, okay, it's a yardstick. We could still make a very good film, as good as it, but not with that kind of budget, which is possible. That is what Half a Yellow Sun will do for the Nigerian film industry. It will move us to that new vista, say, I've seen this film, I can do a film as good as this, but not with this budget.
Many feel the Nigerian film industry could grow even bigger if quality is improved. But even with the low budget on most of its films, few can argue the fact that Nollywood movies have taken the African continent by storm.
Sam Olukoya reporting. In South Africa, dissident veterans from the ruling African National Congress, the ANC, are calling on voters to spoil their ballot papers or vote for another party at the upcoming elections on May the 7th. The rebels, who include two former ministers, say they have been driven to campaigning against their own party by the level of fraud and corruption that exists inside it. Tuzo Kamalo has the story.
Barely 3 weeks before South Africans head to the polls to elect a new president and a new parliament, serious cracks have developed within the ruling African National Congress, ANC. Several senior ANC members, including former Intelligence Minister Ronnie Castries and former Deputy Health Minister Nozizwe Madlala-Rutledge, officially launched a campaign against their own party in Johannesburg on Tuesday. The campaign urges all dissatisfied ANC members and supporters not to vote for the party in the May 7 elections. Instead, they are calling on such voters to vote for opposition parties. The campaign doesn't stop there. It further calls on those who are also unhappy with the opposition parties to go to the polls and spoil their ballots. Madlala-Rutledge said an uncaring government, high levels of corruption, abuse of public funds, such as the recent security upgrades at President Zuma's private Inkandla home, and poor service delivery have forced them to stand up and act.
This is a recognized form of political expression. What do you expect people to do if none of the registered parties really stand for what they stand for?
Castries, who said the rot in the party has gotten to alarming levels, defended their campaign, saying even the late former President Nelson Mandela urged members to march against their party if it failed to fulfill their aspirations.
What did Mandela say when we were coming to power? He said, if we don't deliver and solve the problems of the people, then they have the right to march against us.
The group presented over 100 names of other ANC members who they said have joined their campaign. Jerry Klopane, an informal trader, is one of them. He vowed that the ANC will not get his vote in the coming elections.
I want the ANC to get a little punishment, so I don't know who am I going to vote, because this is a blank check. If I vote the ANC, I vote for these vultures, you know.
However, staunch ANC members, including Itani Rasala Navo, have dismissed the anti-ANC campaign as a non-event.
I myself am here to campaign for more votes from young people. Young people are very much excited to vote for the African National Congress. So this is one of those campaigns where people want to gain publicity and most probably financial support.
The ANC and the government have also responded to the campaign, calling it an irresponsible act. But Castries said they are not worried about the verbal attacks and are ready to bear the consequences of their move. He, however, insisted that they are still members of the ANC. In his opinion, they have embarked on this campaign to restore the dignity of their party.
Tuzo Kamalo reporting.
Making a difference.
Whether reporting on child trafficking, illegal mining, or corruption at the local vehicle licensing authority, investigative journalists can and do make a difference. Anas Arimaya Anas is an award-winning reporter from Ghana, and our correspondent Isaac Kaledzi has been to see him.
I met Anas Arimaya Anas in his office in Accra. He told me why he decided to specialize in investigative undercover journalism.
Well, I guess the motivation to get into journalism is not different from the same motivation you have. I mean, you grow up in a community where you think you can contribute towards the development, improvement of conditions within that community. It's something that society always look up to. You get it every day. People want to improve on what they have.
Anas' type of investigative journalism has several times put his life at risk, as he has been threatened by people he exposed during undercover missions. He has exposed corruption within the revenue collection system in Ghana, highlighted the plight of albinos, as well as abuse within orphanages and child trafficking. Some of his reports have been aired on many international platforms. Anas says he knew there would be many challenges.
Once you take a decision that you want to belong to a particular brand of journalism, you've got to be prepared. The risk would always be there, but you have to make sure that you have the capacity to deal with them as they come. I think that every good journalist must have very good backup systems to deal with them as and when they come. It's all about the conviction and the focus. If you don't turn that dream into a reality, then you are not in business.
Anas recently premiered his latest film on some of the exposés he carried out in Ghana's Driver and Vehicle Licensing Authority. In that film, officials of the Driver and Vehicle Licensing Authority were captured on video taking bribes from unqualified drivers and handing them licenses to drive. Police officers, who were also supposed to enforce the law by arresting such unqualified drivers, let them go by taking bribes. He received commendation from the general public and policymakers. Anas says he's happy that his work is contributing towards changing society.
So yes, I get the fulfillment that what I do has the necessary impact that it has. You see, as a human being, you cannot have things 100%. But the point is that you should ask yourself, what has been the change? The most important thing is that it shouldn't be just about me. It should be about me, you, and everybody. It should be about civil society. All of us must have the courage and the determination to keep pushing the frontiers.
Muhid Said is proud to be one of Anas's best friends.
Anytime we see his work being positively mentioned, we also have this satisfaction of being close to somebody who is making such a huge impact.
On the streets of Accra, Ghanaians love Anas and appreciate him for impacting society.
Anas is a social friend who endeavors to make society have a certain appraisal of itself to be positive. So in his works, you can find truth. You can find a lot of truth in his work.
I think that his work is very, very, very much important. And for me, I would think that governments in and out should encourage him.
Anas has plenty of plans for fresh stories, but ultimately he wants to train young journalists who wish to follow in his footsteps.
Isaac Kaledze reporting, and Making a Difference returns at the same time next week.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And before we leave you here on Africa Link, a reminder of our main stories. Suspected Islamist extremists have abducted about 100 female students from a school in northeastern Nigeria. One day after a bomb attack on the capital Abuja claimed at least 75 lives. Rwandan police have paraded before the media four people accused of planning grenade attacks on the country's leaders. We've also been hearing about two ANC veterans who are campaigning against their own party 3 weeks before an election. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. If you'd like to contact us, you can send a text message to country code 49. 160-957-59510. I'll give that number to you once again. Country code 49 160 957 59510, or you can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. I'll be back again at the same time tomorrow with more stories from Africa. Do join me if you can. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.